Hey, USA Volleyball fans, this is Steven Munson, co-host of the USA Volleyball Show. Here's an excerpt from Christian Hartford's NTDP Academy course.
Hey everyone, my name's Christian Hartford. On this course, we're gonna talk about how to maximize performance while on the road. Me personally, and I tell all of my athletes this, it is perfectly okay to be that weird looking person stretching by the bathrooms on an airplane. You should definitely be doing that, right? As athletes, especially volleyball players, we usually have some long-limbed athletes, and so sitting on airplane seats gets pretty tight. Therefore, we usually tell them to get up every hour or two, depending on the sleeping, obviously. But if you're awake, get up every hour or two and stretch out, just lengthen out. Whenever you're sitting in a seat, either on an airplane or in a car for so long, your hip flexors are going to tighten up. Usually our posture is affected because the seat pushes our shoulders forward. So whenever you stand and you're walking around, try to stretch things like your quads, your hip flexors, okay, stretch out your pecs, maybe, you know, put your arm up on the wall and kind of just get a good chest stretch, open those shoulders up, right? But the most important general theme here is to keep moving. If you want to learn more from me on how to maximize your game, subscribe to the NTDP Academy at usavolleyball.org.
Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Steven Munson.
Hello. My voice just cracked, and welcome to the USA Volleyball Show, where the official podcast of USA Volleyball. We have a double header for you this week as we go into two episodes dropping today. This is episode number 33. What you're listening to right now, we are going to dive into the 2022 NCAA Beach Volleyball Championship with none other than guest Holly McPeak, of course, an Olympian, bronze medalist, and broadcaster for Fox Sports, ESPN, and the Pac-12, once Pac-10, network. And we'll be on the site. She will be on site to call the championships too. So really, really exciting guest to have Holly on too.
Yeah, really thankful that we were able to get Holly McPeak, a legend in the volleyball world, a legend on the beach for USA Beach Volleyball. And just having her expert insight on this episode was just amazing and awesome. And honestly, the conversation we had with her, listening to her stories from her career, how she got into broadcasting, just incredible. A lot of great stuff ahead for the listeners. So definitely sit tight. We got a little intro here that we're going to get into, but we promise we'll get to the interview and it will be worth it.
Absolutely.
But Clarence. So yeah, like Clarence, you said, this is, we have two episodes dropping today. This is episode 33. We also have episode 34 available to listen now. And we talked to U.S. Men's National Team Technical Coordinator Nate Goh about the 2022 NCAA Men's Volleyball Championship. And he highlights the teams and the players to look out for during the championship, during the tournament. So, again, great to have his expert insight on this. He's been kind of following the season, the men's season, very closely, doing some analysis on his own end and for the U.S. men's team as well, as they kind of start to look at who they're going to be inviting to come to the national team gym and have a shot this quad to make the team. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, really Nate and Steven also covered their snowboarding adventures you know, this past ski and snowboard season, so that was a lot of fun to hear right. about. Yep. Yeah, that's stay right. tuned.
Yeah, before we get into the news here, Clarence, you and I were on site on the ground in Phoenix, Arizona for the girls 18 junior national championship. How was that event for you?
I think, you know, that being the first ever, you know, GGNC 18s national championship that I went to, amazing. Like mm-hmm. the level of competition and the overall emotions of, you know, this is your club's last run for those, all the 18-year-olds. This is it. Last hurrah. Last time we're going to put on that club jersey. The emotion was there. The intensity was there. You know, all the divisions across the board. It was an amazing event to see. It really was.
Yeah, I think my favorite part, besides just the incredible volleyball and the level of play at that tournament, There's just seeing the parents there too. They have been through this volleyball journey with their kids, you know, mm-hmm. since they were 10, 11, 12 years old. A lot of them, you know, have been with the same club for that long too, all the way through to their 18s. And, you know, just to see them compete in their last junior event before they kind of gear up and get ready for college volleyball was just really cool to see, and definitely a little little emotional too. You can tell from the fans and the parents, but really cool event. One of my favorite events at USA Volleyball, the 18s. It's a lot of volleyball to pack into one weekend too.
I know, man. Especially awards day, finals day. That yep. was insane. You know, mm-hmm. We had a little bit of time to watch the. I believe 18 open final, you know, a little bit of a city rivalry we got there, Texas versus California. And I'm talking between me and you, Steven.
That's right.
The clubs.
That's right.
But yeah. But I mean, with that aside, I mean, 18 was an amazing event to go to. And we get a little bit of a break from travel now that we're back home in, you know, Colorado. Just a tad, you know, you're up in Denver. I'm down in Colorado Springs. And, you know, before you know it, we'll be back on the road and traveling to different events.
Yeah. Where are you heading to next?
Next up is Opens Adult Nationals in Orlando.
Nice.
Yes. That'll be a lot of fun.
That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm going to be headed to around that same time. I'll be at the Volleyball Nations League. The women's national team will be there hosting in Shreveport, Bossier City. So really excited for that one. And just to see our national team compete for the first time since the Tokyo Olympic Games. So it'll be really cool. I think there'll be some new faces there. So it'll be a lot of fun to watch that event.
Mm-hmm. Just again, a lot of fun across the board. Summer's getting near. You just can't wait. Again, volleyball still going on just because
a lot of volleyball, a lot of
Olympics
volleyball.
And Paralympics are over. We got a whole new quad that we're getting rolling with. It's good to hear.
Yeah. Just since we were just talking about 18s, we'll get into our news here. Talking specifically about girls 18s and that event. Congratulations. Seven titles were handed out at the 2022 USA Volleyball Girls 18s Junior National Championship. So mm-hmm. congratulations to Sunshine Volleyball Club 18 LA Southern California region for winning the Open Division Championship. The Sunshine Volleyball Club West Side. Yeah, they won. Sunshine Volleyball Club won two championships.
Representing.
Really cool. Yeah. Southern California region as well. Winning the USA Division Championship. Front Range Volleyball Club right here in the Rocky Mountain region. Mm-hmm. National Division Champs. Coast Volleyball Club 18 Rachel. Southern California region, Freedom Division champs, San Antonio Juniors, 18 Adidas, Lone Star region, American Division champs, Golden West, Tower Zero, 18 ASICS, Southern California region, Liberty Division champs, and SG Elite 18 Rochambeau, Southern California region, Patriot Division champs. Congratulations again to all those clubs. And I believe it was a record 350 clubs that competed at the event. So just an awesome achievement to even make it to that event. So congratulations to everyone who competed.
Oh yeah. Imagine registering 350 teams in about 4 or 5 hours. I'm just kidding. It was actually not that bad.
I think you can.
We did it. It happened and it was great too. Yeah. You know, I think we should switch over to the beach side of things in our news here. Just in case you all weren't aware of USA Volleyball and the Association of Volleyball Professionals, AKA AVP, announced the launch of the U.S. Beach Club Championship, a new and innovative competition for junior beach volleyball clubs across the nation. The inaugural event will be held on July 29th through July 31st in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This event immediately follows the USA Volleyball Beach National Championship and will run concurrently with the AVP Pro Series Fort Lauderdale Open. So if you're out there for either of those events, stick around, check it out. A lot more info and registration details are available on usavolleyball.org. Check it out there on our website.
Also, the World Paravolley Organization released its 2022 awards and honored several U.S. athletes, coaches, and officials, including for the Outstanding Achievement Award, Kaleo Kanahaley McClay, which, side note, congratulations, Kaleo, you just for welcoming your new baby. Congratulations to you and Matthew and Duke, now a big brother. Really exciting. Also for that award, Monique Matthews, Brent Rasmussen, Greg Walker, and Bethany Zumo. For the Distinguished Service Award, Elliot Blake, Joe Campbell, Eric Duda, Mike Hewlett, and Bill Hameter. And the Honorary Life Member Achievement Award, John Kessel. Congratulations to everyone for earning those awards, and definitely well-deserved. Congratulations on being honored for that.
Absolutely. Now, we promise we will get through the episode here very, very, very soon. But before we do, as we look ahead to the NCAA Beach Championship, we're going to check in with USA Volleyball Beach Event Coordinator and Weather Expertise, Coral Arroyo Baez with Gulf Shores, Alabama Weather Report. Again, Coral, hands down, one of the best weather professionals, weather enthusiasts, just overall amazing person that you will receive this update for too. We got to work together in Fort Lauderdale in person, and she's on it. You know, she was on a lot of the updates, a lot of the, you know, warnings before, you know, we even got them on our phones and everything too. So again, Coral, go ahead and take it away.
Thank you, Clarence. Hello, USA Volleyball fans. This is Coral, your USAV Beach Event Coordinator here with your Gulf Shores forecast for this weekend. Starting off the NCAA tournament, USC high TCUs in the 80s and low temperatures staying within the 60s overnight. These high temperatures will bring some high winds during the afternoon hours, so be ready to deal with the wind as the day progresses. It won't be unexpected if you see a layer of fog through the early morning hours, but that Layola moisture should burn off with the sunshine coming in strong as it does at Florida State. Thursday night, the weather pattern shifts, and I wouldn't venture out unless LSU brought an umbrella. Scattered storms will be in the area on Friday. Nothing as grand as the area has seen recently. Can you believe it? That said, it's likely lightning will be in the area, so if you plan on being out on the beach, be ready to pack up your gear and head inside as instructed. Returning outdoors 30 minutes after the last strike of lightning within an 8-mile radius is the state safety Stanford. Showers should taper off Friday evening, but if you think you'll be in the clear coming on Saturday, GCU again. Rain may linger along the coastal areas on Saturday, so don't miscalculate as you plan your day. Hawaii temperatures return on Sunday with temperatures rebounding back into the 80s just as the NCAA tournament comes to a close with only one team left, Stetson, as the champion. Shout out to Cal Poly, Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and UT Martin. I couldn't quite get you guys in the forecast, but congratulations on getting into the tournament and best of luck to all the teams competing this weekend. For those of you who will be watching at home like me, I guarantee 100% chance of high quality beach volleyball for the rest of this week, so don't miss out on the action in Gulf Shores.
All right. Thanks, Coral, for that weather report. It's definitely going to be an exciting weekend in Gulf Shores. One of my favorite beaches I've ever been to. It's beautiful. And that event is just crazy and so much fun. But if you haven't already, way back in episode 8, we talked to Coral and talked a lot about her background. She studied meteorology in college. She really is a weather expert and knows so much about it, and helped a lot with Florida State volleyball too, in that aspect. So definitely go check that episode out. But let's get right to it, Clarence. You already know our guest today. Here's Olympic bronze medalist Holly McPeak. Holly, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and talk with us. We're really excited for this episode, especially as we head into the Beach Championships, NCAA Beach Championships. Just really quickly, wanted to talk to you about your broadcasting career. What made you want to get into broadcasting? How'd that start?
That's a really good question because, you know, it wasn't something I planned on. I used to be very shy, didn't like being in front of the camera at all. But towards the end, well, not towards the, I would say middle of my career, my husband would always go, what are you going to do after this? And I'm like, you know what? I'm one of those people, I'm all in now. I don't want to have like one foot over here and be like, I don't want to split my energy and my dedication. And so I just kind of put it off. And then I got an opportunity through Fox Sports. They were doing the Pac-12. It was back then, it was Pac-10 game of the week. And said, hey, we need somebody who can do that. And I had been away from the indoor game for a while because I was all in for beach. I'm like, I had to relearn it, but but I thought it was a great opportunity. And I was bad. I tried, I did the classes, I took private lessons, but it's not easy, you know, not using the same word over and over again, doing the prep work, learning the teams, learning how to be a professional broadcaster. So a lot of these younger athletes and broadcasters, they take classes, they do a lot of work. I had no experience. So I was starting from zero. So I would say it probably took me about, I only did it in the fall. So I probably did 10 games, one a week. And so I feel like it took me like 5 or 6 years to start like getting confident. And I would always meet with this guy. He was kind of my mentor, Lou Riggs, and we would critique my video, and it was just painful. And I was paying him a lot of money. I'm like, why am I doing this? This is awful. But I like to learn. I hate being bad at stuff. It kind of evolved from there, and then more opportunities came. And the beautiful thing, I mean, I love indoor volleyball. You know, it was kind of not where I actually started on the beach, but it had some of my best friends, some of my great experiences, my education all came from being involved with indoor. And I love it. To this day, I love it. But the opportunity to broadcast beach volleyball just blew my mind. Like, for me, that's my sweet spot because I live it, breathe it. You know, it's me. I get to coach young athletes. So I know what they're going through. I obviously know strategies. And I know all the players involved, including the coaches. So it's kind of been a nice, perfect storm with everything coming together. And I still do indoor, and I still love that too. But beach volleyball has really become a fun thing to do on TV, especially with NCAAs coming up.
I know you mentioned just kind of funny how you said you would always go over, you know, film and you know, just kind of rehearing your voice and going about that. And I just know that every as my voice is cracking, yeah, I'm going to hate that. But every person who goes over and just listens to themselves just hates it. Just like, oh, my God, I sound terrible.
It's painful.
The way we critique ourselves, it's just funny. You got to laugh at it sometimes. But is this something that you've always seen yourself doing? I know you said you came up kind of shy and, you know, just kind of
I never saw myself doing it. I really didn't. I mean, like I said, I didn't feel comfortable in front of the camera. Once I started winning and I was getting interviewed on TV a lot, you know, I became more and more comfortable. But it's different when someone's asking you a question about your game. Oh, yeah, that last, you know, side change, we knew we had the momentum, we were switching to the good side. I mean, that's easy. But when you're interviewing people and talking about other, it's different. So no, I didn't see myself. I wanted to go to law school and, you know, I didn't even think I was going to have a career playing beach volleyball. So, you know, just things came together. I had different opportunities. I embraced it and kind of, you know, it exploded from there.
You mentioned you enjoy still being close to the game of beach volleyball. And that's one of the things you like about being a broadcaster for beach volleyball. What are some of your favorite parts about broadcasting? What do you like most? Is it the kind of entertaining, being close to the game, the relationships with players and coaches?
I like the connection to the sport. I mean, all these athletes have the same thing in common as I do. They love the sport of whether it's indoor or beach. They're going through all the challenges of being a student athlete in college, you know, to battling injuries, to, you know, having all the pressures of college, but still having to compete. And then obviously, you know, the big competition, like how do you put your team together in a position to win the NCAA championship? That's everyone's goal in college for the most part. So I just feel like I have a lot in common. I like to kind of represent, I guess, for the fans that are watching on TV, I kind of like to be that connection. So like teaching them what they're not seeing, what they can look for, hoping that they can have a connection with some of the athletes by telling their stories. And, you know, I think I've gotten better at that over the years, you know, telling the stories, explaining the sport. You know, for a while they said, you know, for TV, let's pretend like we're talking to somebody who has no idea what they're talking about. And people always go, why do you always dumb it down for TV? I'm like, well, they want us to teach. So we try and teach and then kind of give them an evolution. But if you think about it, I mean, I love sports. So listening to John Madden or John Gruden, I mean, I love learning from them, like the little nuances to look for and stuff. So we, as broadcasters, try and portray that as well.
Just kind of reflecting on all the homework we have to do and, you know, the best practices and people we even studied going into this simple thing, like, well, not so simple because it's a lot of work with this podcast, but, you know, with our own podcast and, you know, just kind of making sure we're on our P's and Q's when it comes to, you know, guests like yourself and other, you know, very decorated guests that come on the show and, you know, just anyone we have. And, you know, so that's a really, really important thing to keep in mind. But I know you mentioned, you know, the tournament, and I think we should, you know, take the time to switch gears into, you know, just kind of highlight that USC did win in 2021. And, you know, would like your thoughts on who you think is going to take the title in 2022.
Well, gosh, this year is the deepest field in NCAA history for beach volleyball. They've also expanded. Last year was 8. This year is 16 teams. So opening up the field, and it was definitely needed. But the format, if you don't know, is Wednesday, 16 teams play one single elimination duel. Winner advances, losers go home. Thursday, day off or day to prep. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is the double elimination 18 bracket. So it's, you know, it's a lot of pressure. USC is the team to beat. But there's some programs nipping at their heels. The pressure in Gulf Shores is like nothing I've ever felt before. And I've been to a lot of Olympic Games. It is intense and fun. And I mean, I am the broadcaster and I have goosebumps when they start playing the music, you know. And then it just, it's fast and furious when five teams are going at the same time, battling to see who's going to win. Sometimes it looks like a team's about to win, they're up 2-0, and then the other team wins the next three in a row, and you're like, whoa. So, I mean, it's just so exciting. TCU has made a huge push. They've got talent and depth. They've had a great season. UCLA is young but super talented. You know, there's FSU, there's LSU, LMU, and then GCU is kind of, you know, under the radar, but they can do some damage. So, I mean, to say six teams who I think have a legitimate shot at stealing that title, I mean, that's pretty exciting. I don't think I've ever been able to say more than two or three teams in the past.
Yeah, I was just looking at the rankings this morning, and I think they're supposed to update today. I don't think they have, but as of April 19th, TCU was number two. And I was like, whoa, that's awesome. I'm from Dallas, which I know TCU is in Fort Worth, but, you know, go Horn Frogs.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see them at the top of the beach rankings. That's awesome.
Yeah. They came out to UCLA and beat UCLA at their home courts.
Wow.
They've been, you know, building up to this. Hector Gutierrez, the head coach of TCU, has been working and building. He's got a lot of young, talented players, and a lot of the puzzle pieces just came together. And they are really good. And then you've got LMU, who's got a lot of six years, if you talk about the COVID year. USC is the same way, very old in terms of their roster, their average age on the roster. So it's going to make for a very high level of volleyball and a very exciting tournament.
You mentioned the format, the unique format of this tournament. And I got the opportunity to go to, I don't, was it 2018, maybe 2019 championships? And I'd never seen anything like it. Just the atmosphere of the tournament and the duels is such a cool part of it, with, especially when it comes down to the wire and, yeah, you know, one match will finish and then all the fans and players run over to the next court to watch that the next match finish and cheer for their teams. Can you just describe, you know, elaborate a little bit on that atmosphere of the tournament and Gulf Shores?
Gosh, I wish I could. I mean, it's hard to put it into words, but basically you're in Gulf Shores, Alabama, white sand beach, beautiful ocean. Yep. Usually we have great weather. There's usually some wind involved there, which is kind of the great equalizer as well. But there's five courts spread around, you know, the first three kind of in a row and then two a little bit closer to the water. And, you know, pairs ones, twos, threes, fours, and fives face off on their prospective court. And, you know, first team to score three. So it can be crazy for a lot of reasons, because you can be, you know, halfway through your second set and you hear that horn. That horn means that the other team or your team has scored 3 points and you stop. We don't play to completion. We play to decision. So it's intense. And you kind of have to just focus on your court. You don't want to look up at that big board unless you're a coach or a fan. The big board has every court, the current score, and the points on the board for the duel. So, I mean, there's just a lot going on. The energy is crazy. And it really comes down to the end when things are wrapping up in a particular set or particular match and everyone goes crazy. They run to that court where they think it's going to end first. It's a lot of fun.
How do you think all this craziness is going to affect the teams entering the tournament for the first time? Just a whole experience, a lot to take in.
Yeah, it's funny because we've been talking. I'm on the ESPN crew that's going to cover it. And we've been talking to some of the teams and trying to prepare them for that. Like Gail Stammer, who's the head coach at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. She's like, you guys don't, this is a big deal. They're getting on a conference call, like a Zoom call with Nina Matthews, the former coach at Pepperdine, to just talk about the intensity and the pressure. Because I think when you first come in, you're like, TCU last year, they had a great season. They had a lousy Gulf Shores. They were not good. I think that's going to serve them well this year, just because they got it out of the way. They know what to expect. But sometimes the first time you're like, whoa, what did I get into? This is gnarly. But it's fun too. If you embrace it as an opportunity and go in a little bit fearless, you know, it can be a lot of fun. And, you know, obviously the end result could be an NCAA title.
You mentioned just the depth of the pool in this tournament and looking in and, you know, teams like GCU, TCU climbing up the rankings. What are some of the big storylines you and your crew at ESPN are watching as you head into the event?
Well, we're just starting to dig into it. We only have two automatic qualifiers in so far, and that's Stetson. Stetson actually has 10 international players, which I find interesting.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And then Texas A&M Corpus Christi, they've been doing this slow build. They didn't even realize that there was going to be an automatic qualifier bid from their conference until March of this year. So they were just trying to win their conference. But focusing on that obviously led to good things. And they got, you know, they have this week to kind of prepare for next week when all the other schools have a conference tournament this weekend. So we really don't know who's going to be there. Yes, we can guess. But we're researching, trying to figure that out, but we really can't start to delve into stories until we know who's going to be there for sure. And then there's obviously the at-large bids, you know, those are the ones representing the West or the East. And then the wild cards. I mean, you're assuming they're going to go down the rankings, but you never know. So.
Man, bid season's just, it's so exciting, but, you know, on the back end, it's so stressful at the same time. But I mean, overall, I think that is an amazing just take on, you know, a look into the tournament going into this year. Like, I'm super excited. You know, I wish we would have the, you know, chance to go there and watch it in person. Like Stephen, you know, you said you had a chance to, and, you know, just all these other just amazing experiences there too. But we did want to switch gears a little bit to just, you know, dive into a little bit more about you. And, you know, this is a question we ask all of our guests here. And, you know, it's honestly one of our favorites because, you know, just the road to the game, being introduced to the sport is so different by like across the board of so many people. You know, so we just have to ask you, how did you get introduced to the game of volleyball?
Gosh, that's a really good question. I mean, I grew up in Manhattan Beach. My parents divorced when I was 5. So my dad would take us to the beach. I mean, he had 3 kids, and he was by himself. So he would take us to the beach. He had a crew and they would play beach volleyball every Saturday all day. So we'd go and kind of hang out. We boogie boarded, we did whatever. we kind of just started picking up the ball and rallying it. And it was fun, you know, but they were the older people playing. And then we played in a little rec league at the Manhattan Beach Pier in the summer. So we kind of fell in love with the sport. We'd see the Manhattan Beach Open, which wasn't really pro then, but it was so cool to see. And it was such an amazing part of the beach culture. I mean, these beach volleyball players, when I was growing up, were like gods. They're like, oh my gosh, they won the Manhattan. I mean, that was a huge deal. So I played beach volleyball before I ever played indoor. Indoor in seventh grade, at the middle school, I tried out and I obviously had some good skills from the beach. And I fell in love with it. And they said, hey, you should go try out for South Bay Volleyball Club. And I did. And, you know, the rest is history. I started playing club volleyball and high school volleyball and, you know, and it just snowballed and I loved it, you know. So I'd play for basically back then it was December through June was the club indoor season. And then I'd play beach all summer long. It was great. And then obviously in high school, you start playing September through December and then it starts again. So, and it was a nice break, right? I played indoor most of the year, but then to play in the summer, I mean, literally I would go to the beach. I was a beach rat. Nobody had cell phones, those days. So it was kind of a social thing. We'd all go to the beach and we'd play volleyball all day long. I'd be there at 9 a.m. and I'd leave at 7 p.m. And in my opinion, there's no better way to spend the day. I was exhausted. I'd been with all my friends and I'm outdoors, you know, it was incredible. I loved every minute of it, but I loved each of the sports because they are very different sports for different reasons. I love the camaraderie of the six people working together on the court. I was a setter indoors. So you're kind of team leader, psychologist, coach on the court, right? You got to talk your hitters up and get them in the right mindset. I love that. And then being on the beach, I had to do it all. You know, even though I was little, I mean, I got every serve and, you know, I had to figure out a way to put it away. So, I just fell in love with both sports at a very early age.
You mentioned, you know, just loving both games. They're both very different, a lot transfers between the two, and you started on the beach. What were some of those early struggles you had moving to the indoor game? Anything that was just really different for you?
Yeah, no, I don't really remember having any struggles. I mean, obviously I had to learn the proper technique and the proper, right, you know, quicker hands and all that stuff. But when you love a sport, you're just hungry to learn and get better. So I didn't mind that process.
Yeah. Imagine being especially a setter was just, you know, I think it benefits you playing beach first, and then going into being an indoor setter, but there's just a little slight different technique in setting on both sides, both in each game.
Well, from the beach, I learned, I was a very good out of system setter. I could bump set on a dime because, yeah, you know, that's what I did on the beach and there's, yeah, no wind. And then obviously my defense from covering everything on the beach.
Oh yeah, of course.
Really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Talking about your Olympic career, you were in three Olympic Games, 96, 2000, 2004. And of course, in 2004, you won the bronze medal. What were some of the, you know, highlights from that those experiences? You know, any favorite memories or stories that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, unfortunately, there was a lot of heartbreak in the first two.
Right.
I went in as the gold medal favorite in 96 with Nancy Reno, but nobody knew that she had torn her rotator cuff on her hitting arm. So we weren't able to train. We weren't able to do anything leading up to the Olympics. And, you know, I trained on my own. I did what I could. She tried to rest and get the treatment she could. We just weren't the same team that dominated the world tour that previous year in 95. I mean, I think we won 11 straight tournaments internationally. We were the dominant team. So that was heartbreaking. And then rebounding from that, you know, nothing I can do about it. Next day, I was like, I'm on a mission for the next one. And some weird stuff happened. I had some partner issues fall through. Nancy Reno got her shoulder fixed. And then, you know, 2 years before Sydney, she's like, let's try it again. And then she dumped me. And I was like, oh my gosh, really? And I was out of the picture in terms of partners. Everybody had already teamed up. So I had to like really brainstorm. And I'm like, you know what? I've been hearing about this girl, Misty May. She's at Long Beach State. She's still there. I don't know her, but I hear she's great on the beach. So I called her up. I'm like, hey, my name's Holly McPhee, blah, blah, blah. Can we have dinner? Had dinner with her. And I said, look, I don't know what you're thinking about doing, but I would love if you would think about coming on the beach with me. I think we could do it. And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm committed to the indoor team. And I said, okay, well, if you change your mind, I'm here. So in the meantime, I just picked up whoever, tried to train, tried to compete, but I didn't have that consistent partner. And then Misty, I believe it was January, calls me and said, yeah, you know, the indoor is not going to work out for me. Let's do this. And I was like, okay. But she had no idea what she was getting herself into. I mean, obviously I work really hard. She did not understand the commitment, but once she got in, I mean, she thrived, but it was hard. It took some time, but Gene Selznick was our coach at the time. And he really helped bring her along. And we would work on something in March. By April, she was amazing at it. You know, she's just such a sponge, great volleyball mind. I play with her every Thursday. Still, we play fours, but, she was amazing, but it was a gnarly year of qualifying and her body broke down. She tore her ab muscle. I believe it was 8 weeks before the Sydney Olympic Games, a torn ab muscle. I mean, I had to find a specialist to work with her. He's like, look, we can't have surgery in that time, but we'll try and rehab it and strengthen around all this stuff. So we did the best we could, but again, we couldn't train. She couldn't go in the sand for most of that 8 weeks. So we just lost our rhythm. Again, we were a medal favorite, but the injury got in the way. And, you know, it's heartbreaking. It comes every 4 years. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Is this happening again? So by 2004, I was able to play with Elaine Youngs, another veteran whose Olympic dream had kind of eluded her on the beach side. She should have been qualified in 2000 and she didn't. And we were able to make a great run. And, you know, at that time, we were the second best team in the USA. Carrie and Misty had established themselves as the one team, but we were, you know, top two, three in the world. We stayed healthy, had a great experience, and were able to win the bronze medal. The only team we lost to was Carrie and Misty. And we know they're a pretty special team. Probably the best team ever to play on the beach. So that was definitely the highlight. 2004, just being on the podium with Carrie and Misty and also Sheldon and Adriana Bayar from Brazil, who are two of my best friends. I was on the world tour with them for many years. So that was a moment I will never forget, being on the podium with five of my best friends. It was incredible.
That's so cool. And what a, you know, career moment. You mentioned the struggle with injuries and the unluckiness, you know, coming so close, to the Olympic Games and having those injuries, right at the end of the finish line, just so tough. And, especially when you were coming in as a favorite too, to medal, but heartbreak, really, but, yeah,
you know, it teaches you grit and, you get knocked down, you got to get back up. And
that's right. That's right.
Know, those are life lessons. And I'm grateful for them because I get knocked down weekly and I have to get back up and, you know, and you learn what to do when you're uncomfortable. So these are lessons that, you know what, I had to learn them and I'm glad I did. I wish it could have been in another way. Maybe right. Could have had some gold medals there, but you know, what are you going to do? I'm proud of my career. I think I maximized what I was born with. I worked harder than anybody. And I was a professional from an early age. I really took it in a professional manner because I thought it was such an incredible opportunity to be a professional female athlete playing a sport that I love, traveling the world. I mean, I hadn't traveled anywhere. I got to see the world. It was incredible.
Yep. And ended on the podium with five of your best friends. That's it was such a sweet finish.
Yeah.
And still playing fours every week. I think that's
really cool. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And Misty is still a baller. We have so much fun. So much fun. I've got a titanium hip and she's got a titanium knee, but we're still good.
Clarence, next time we're in California, we need to get in on that action. Maybe play
absolutely
some fours with them.
Let us know what beach and we'll
hit you up. Yeah.
We'll bring our game.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the overall game of beach volleyball. And, you know, since, you know, your experience is playing up until now, what do you think has been the biggest proponent in the growth of the sport of beach volleyball?
Well, that's an easy answer because the grassroots of the sport of beach volleyball have exploded like I could have never imagined in my entire life. I mean, blow my mind. When I was playing and growing up in high school, I could barely find another teenager who would play. I always played with the adults. Nobody played. They all played indoor. And then going from indoor to beach, they weren't very good. So then they didn't want to play. So to go, you know, I've owned Elite Beach Volleyball Club for the last 10 years with Barbara Fontana, Eric Fonomawana, in Marais Bustamante. So in the last 10 years, I have just seen an explosion at the grassroots level. You go to any given junior tournament, there's between 30 and 100 teams signed up per age group. It's nuts. So it's not just me who fell in love with the sport from an early age. You know, these kids are being exposed to it. They love it. A lot of kids are choosing beach instead of indoor. Some can excel at indoor and also play beach at a high level, which is harder. But the level that these high school athletes are playing at is incredible. I mean, they're learning how to drop and pull and run all the different defensive plays that are really advanced that I didn't learn until I was a pro. So it's really been fun to see. It's a wonderful sport. And it's so nice. I mean, this is the most common thing I hear from the parents. I hated being in a gym all day. I love coming to the beach. They're like the gym and the whistles and but the beach, now we're talking and I get it. I get it. So the grassroots, and that started with USA Volleyball really. But CBVA has lots of junior tournaments, AAU, and they've all just blown it up. And across the country, there's these different little hotbeds, North Carolina, Colorado, Tennessee. John Hyden's got a program in Tennessee. Priscilla Lima's got one in Florida. You know, there's all these little programs and pockets, and they're helping grow the sport of beach volleyball and give high level training. So it's really exciting.
You know, do you have any advice that you can give, you know, these younger athletes looking into beach volleyball that haven't necessarily taken that step onto the sand? And, you know, do you encourage indoor over beach, or, you know, do you encourage everyone to do both? And just any advice overall for anyone considering, you know, one or the other, considering beach, just looking to start playing?
Yeah, you know, I don't encourage one or the other. I love them both. I can't decide between either. Because I work in beach volleyball with my club, you know, I get a lot of questions. Hey, what do we do to start beach? I say, hey, maybe start with a couple clinics and see if you like it. And then if you want to play in a little tournament just for fun, see kind of if you like the feel. Most people get hooked right away. And then obviously you can build on it. You can join a local club and start getting that, you know, continuity in terms of training. Obviously, if you can get some good training, you can learn the correct way to play, your game's going to take off and you're going to have a lot of fun and you're going to be able to network with partners and friends. And, you know, that's usually what I recommend. Sometimes people don't have a beach volleyball court. It's funny, this girl, she just moved to Manhattan Beach about 3 months ago. She moved from Arkansas. She had a beach volleyball court in her backyard. She loved it, but she needed competition and coaching and all that stuff. So she moved to Manhattan Beach, California, and here she is. So there's these pockets of interest where people really want to do it. I mean, it'd be an interesting statistic to find out how many people, especially in Texas, have beach volleyball courts in their yard. I'm blown away. I hear it all the time. Oh yeah, I've got a, I'm like, you have a court in your yard too? I mean, how do these people do that? I live at the beach, so we don't have big yards, but we have the beach. But, you know, I think just, you know, try training with a coach a few times or a beach volleyball program, even a collegiate clinic, and see if you like it and then try.
That's awesome. Holly, such a great conversation with you. We need to have you back on where we have a little bit more time. We can dive into so much more things, I think, with you. And your stories are incredible. So thank you so much for sharing that and your Thanks insight, especially into the beach championships coming up here soon.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, listeners, you can see Holly on the broadcast on ESPN at the NCAA Beach Championships. Holly, anything else you'd like to share or talk about before we let you go here?
No, I think we covered it all. I'm just honored, one, that I got to play volleyball, earn an education, and then obviously with beach volleyball, travel the world. I'm just so grateful. And I try and mentor and help these young athletes. And sometimes you're not going to go to the Olympics. You might not even play in college, but you're going to learn life lessons through sports, through being part of a team, you know, through figuring out what to do when you're uncomfortable. I mean, there's so many great benefits of being involved in a sport, trying to learn a sport, and you might not play it forever, but you can learn some great lessons along the way. So I'm just a huge proponent of sports and being part of a program.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Holly. And, we'll definitely stay in touch and we'll be following along with the championship here this weekend.
Great. I appreciate
or next weekend from our recording, but when this episode comes out, it will be this weekend.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Holly.
Bye guys.
Bye. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. To have Holly here with her expert insight, not only just from, you know, her beach volleyball experience, but also as a broadcaster for this event. And she's followed these teams, not only this season, but, you know, in past years too. So she knows the programs very well and the coaches behind the programs. But like she said, it's going to be exciting. This is one of the deepest fields in NCAA beach volleyball championship history. And it's extended this year to 16 teams, as Holly said. So no doubt it's going to be an exciting event, very intense event too. I got the opportunity to go to this event and they play in duels and it's, you know, five matches at a time. And so if say USC is up 3-0 against UCLA, the other two matches, if they're still going on, it's done. They don't play those out. It's done. They've already won the duel. So really a unique event and so cool to be there and watch it. It's going to be incredible volleyball matches.
Yeah, I think she touched on it amazingly too. And, you know, so did you, Stephen. But Holly, again, like we just talked about after her interview, she's an amazing storyteller. Just literally draws you in too. She can talk to you about anything. And I think I'll just be fully invested, you know, kind of like we always talk about with Patty Rolfe, our director of officials. But, you know, storytelling is a gift and she definitely has that gift too. But also at the time of this recording, Selection Saturday has not happened yet. So we don't know the final 16 pool that Holly mentioned, but looking at the rankings, you know, we think we can safely say the top eight right now will be, you know, roughly saying USC, TCU, UCLA, Florida State, Loyola Marymount, LSU, Grand Canyon, and Stanford.
Yeah, so, you know, we're recording this on Friday. Selection Saturday is tomorrow. So we'll know by now when you're listening to this, you'll know that, and we'll already be through those first, first duels as well.
Yes.
But you know, USC won the championship in 2021 and actually, you know, since the inaugural year, in 2016 for the NCAA volleyball championship, the title has been won by USC or UCLA. I think the first 2 years, USC went back to back. Then UCLA went back to back. Then we had the COVID year, unfortunately, having to cancel the event. And then USC won, came back and won last year, 2021. So definitely those two teams, those two programs coming into this event are the favorites. USC currently sits at number one and UCLA number three. But as Holly mentioned, TCU is currently number two. Has been strong contenders, comes in as a strong contender, having a great season, going 36-2. So definitely a team to keep an eye on for this event. Mm-hmm. And I'm from Dallas. I know, listeners, I know Fort Worth is different from Dallas, but it's all part of the DFW Metroplex. So go Horned Frogs. That's all I'm saying.
Anyways, here we might have to head over to our rival here, but and of course, Florida State, LMU, LSU, and Stanford have great beach programs and have made some noise in a tournament over the past years. But another team you may not even be having on your radar right now that Holly talked about for consideration is Grand Canyon, GCU, Grand Canyon University. They can make a splash in this tournament after going 26-6 in the regular season. So, yeah, don't count them out. They can definitely be a sleeper team, an underdog team, a dark horse for those mm-hmm. elected to call them that, too. Definitely don't want to count them out. Again, I cannot wait to watch this one right here, too. It's going to be such a good tournament.
Yeah, as soon as Holly said this is the deepest field she's ever seen in this championship, in the history of this championship, just got me excited. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Definitely a lot to look forward to this weekend in Gulf Shores at the 2022 NCAA Beach Volleyball Championship. Be sure to tune in starting today, May 4th on ESPNU for the first round duels. Then coverage continues Friday, May 6th on ESPNU. Then Saturday, May 7th on ESPN2. Then finally, the semifinal and national championship matches on Sunday, May 8th on ESPN2. More information can be found at NCAA.com.
Mm-hmm. And that's about a wrap for episode number 33. Again, we just want to give a big thank you to Holly for joining us on this episode. We really enjoyed having a conversation with you about your career, how you got into broadcasting, of course, your expert insight on the championship, and also that you're still getting out there and playing fours. And Steve and I will
hopefully
get out there on the sand with you guys and have you show us up one day. But again, big thank you to Holly. And again, listeners, Holly will be on the broadcast all week for the championship. And you can follow Holly on Instagram at Holly McPeak.
Now, on to upcoming events. We got a lot of beach tour events coming up, a lot of opportunities for athletes out there, junior athletes out there, to earn their spot at the USA Volleyball Beach National Championship. So, starting with the Gulf Coast Beach Fest B&Q, May 6th through the 8th in Gulf Shores, Alabama, Gulf Coast region. Lone Star ASC Sand Bay BRQ 2, May 7th in Cedar Park, Texas, Lone Star region. North Texas, Mad Sand May BRQ 1, May 7th in Plano, Texas, North Texas region. Carolina Courts Kickoff BRQ Indian Trail, North Carolina, the Carolina region. I don't have that date in here. I believe it's probably May 7th. That's what I'm going to say here. The North Texas Mad Sand National Qualifier 1, May 14th through the 15th in Plano, Texas, North Texas region. The Northwest Juniors BRQ, May 14th through the 15th. And, oh man, I wish Kyle was here to help me with this pronunciation. Snohomish, Washington. Nailed it. Puget Sound region. Southern California National Qualifier, May 14th in Manhattan Beach, California, Southern California region. The Gateway Beach Bash, May 14th through the 15th in Chesterfield, Missouri, Gateway region. Carolina Grand Slam National Qualifier, May 14th through the 15th in Apex, North Carolina, Carolina region. And finally, the Lone Star ASC Sand May BRQ 3, May 15th in Cedar Park, Texas, Lone Star region. Good luck to everyone competing in those events. You can learn more about the USA Volleyball Beach Tour and other upcoming events at usavolleyball.org.
I love how you just assumed Kyle was going to know how to pronounce that. Secondly, I also love how you just said nailed it right after you pronounced it.
I feel pretty confident about it.
You got to give yourself kudos, you know?
Yeah.
But now we're on to some national team development program events, starting with the indoor spring training series being held and hosted May 6th through the 9th in Chicago, Illinois. Next up, we have the Beach NTDP Gulf Shores Accelerator on May 6th in Gulf Shores, Alabama. Next, after that, we have the Beach Paravolley Recognized Development Event, also on May 6th through 8th in Gulf Shores, Alabama. Again, good luck to everyone competing in those events. And you can check out more information on upcoming events on the calendar on our website at usavolleyball.org. Again, one more time, big shout out to all of the USAV regions working very hard across every weekend, indoor, in beach, on the sand, in para, across the board. We recognize your hard work. We see it. We know it's not easy. And again, thank you all for putting on these events across the country.
Yep. Reminder, listeners, you can rate and review, share with your friends, family, teammates. It really helps this podcast grow, reach new listeners, and we're seeing the support come through. And so thank you so much for listening and sharing the podcast. Want to chat with us? Or maybe you know a club that should be featured? Drop us a line. Let us know. You can email us at the USAV show at usav.org. Leave us feedback, comments. Let us know how we're doing. We want to know future topics too. What do you guys want to hear? Who do you want us to interview? Let us know. Reminder, this is episode 1 of 2 this week. You can check out episode 34 next, right up next after this episode if you want. It's available right now for an inside look at the 2022 NCAA Men's Volleyball Championship with none other than U.S. Men's National Team Technical Coordinator, Nate Goh. Until next time, thank you for listening to the USA Volleyball Show. This is the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson, produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producers are Kyle Scholzen and Laura Fawcett. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your